Okay, that's much better now. So guess what's about to happen? I'm going to start over. This is the beauty of not being live. Those of you all who are watching this on the internet, you did not see what just happened. Even though everybody in here is laughing because they're like, yes, we did. No, you didn't, because I just cut it out. Watch. All right. So as I was saying, you'll probably notice that even though I didn't plan this way, I don't have any shoes on. I don't have anything covering my feet, no steel-toe boots. And it's fitting because, fair warning, this is going to be one of those toe-stomping, like, hurt you type of lessons. This is going to be the kind of sermon that definitely steps on your toes, makes you feel uncomfortable. And that's okay because, like I said, while I didn't plan it this way, I don't have my toes covered either. I definitely got my own toes stepped on as I was putting this together. So you all can kind of see this. And now I'm going to come back here and get a few more feet of distance. But as we transition, I want to talk about trusting God. I want to spend some time over the next 5 weeks or so, give or take, talking about trusting God. And as I was alluding to earlier when we first started our worship service, part of the reason why I want to go into this series and really focusing and really pulling back and peeling back the layers on how we can have a deeper trust in God is because, frankly, we live in some uncertain times right now. There's a lot of things that are oftentimes confusing. They can be challenging. They can be scary even. And it's very easy to say that we have to trust in God and we know we should trust in God, but sometimes trusting in God can feel kind of hard. And so what I want to look at today is not just the fact that trusting God can be hard, but how we can simplify trusting God. How is it that God is everywhere, and we understand his power. Curtis did a great job. I appreciate him bringing up and really emphasizing how much Christ's love for us is what compelled him to do the things that he did for us by going to the cross for us. God, in offering his son, he loves us. We know this, and yet sometimes it can be very difficult still, even when we've been walking with Jesus for so many years, it can still be difficult to trust God. And yet, there was a saying that a buddy of mine named Paul, who he always says, sometimes, even when you're doing something is right, even when you know you're doing something is right, sometimes you can do the right thing the wrong way. A lot of times, I'm doing this thing, and I know this is the right thing to do, but you're doing it wrong. Very often when it comes to trusting God, where we are in our faith, where we are spiritually, we're doing the right things, but we're doing it the wrong way. And trust is one of those things. I've given the lesson today, which is quite fitting. It's called Press Play, because except for the handful of people I'm looking at, that's what all of you did who are watching me and listening to me right now. You press play. And it's interesting because I chose this. This is actually the first time that, with COVID-19 going on, this is the first time that I've actually pre-recorded. It's the first time I've actually done that. And I'm actually grateful. Again, I cut something out. You'll never see it. But the good thing about pre-recording is that, you don't have to worry about some of the details and the timing and everything. And yet for me, I kind of resisted doing a pre-recording of anything. I just don't like it. It just didn't feel authentic. It just didn't feel like something natural to me. And as I told you about my own toes getting stepped on, one of the things that I found is that during COVID-19, during this new normal that we've been experiencing, I spent a lot of time praying over the past week in particular, God, help me to see how I can do better. Not just in my role in preaching and ministry, but how can I be better in trusting you during this time? There's a lot of things that, interestingly enough, I thought, you know, this just doesn't make sense. This shouldn't be that hard. Why is this so complicated? You know, there's simple instructions. Just like when somebody says, hey, you know, press play. That's simple enough. But you think, how could somebody mess up just walking in and press play? And yet when it comes to trusting God, all too often, especially for those of us who've been following a long time, pressing play, doing something simple, it's that hard. And I want to look at an example of this. But first, I want to set it up because, you know, it's kind of interesting. There's this movie that came to mind just earlier this afternoon. Those of you all may not be able to see this. It's kind of small. There was a movie came out, I believe it was 1984. Richard Pryor was on a roll. He was coming out with a bunch of movies in the late 70s and early 80s. Some of my favorites. This one was called Brewster's Millions. And for those of you all who have never seen Brewster's Millions, I don't know where you've been. You're probably much younger than me. But the point is, basically the premise was this guy who's named Montgomery Brewster, this is Richard Pryor, he was a AAA, about to retire, semi-retire, washed up pitcher playing for a minor league team. And I've been thinking about baseball a lot because my baseball team that I coach is back. They had their first tournament. And so, anyway, long story short is he has a long-lost relative, like great-great uncle, and he's the nearest relative. And so this guy dies, and he is a multi-millionaire 100 times over, right? So he says, here's the deal. I'm going to give you $30 million, and you have to spend this $30 million within 30 days. He gives him a full month. He said, but you have conditions on this. You can't tell anybody what you're doing. The only people who would know it is the trustees and the accountants and the people who I've hired who are going to manage the money and make sure that you've wasted all this money. He said, because I want you to hate spending money. I want you to just get to the point where you just detest wealth and riches. So he says, I want you to go through and burn, just spend all of this money, and after 30 days, you have to be penniless. And what happens is, as he's going through, he said, you can't tell anybody. And so because he couldn't tell anybody, everybody knew he was, you know, just kind of making ends meet, trying to hang on to his baseball career. So they're looking at him. His best friend in the movie was his catcher, John Candy. And they're looking at him and they're thinking, what is wrong with you? Why are you wasting all of this money? You should be saving some of that. People were even trying to figure out ways of hiding. It was so hilarious at the end of the movie. People, they said, you know, you ran through all your money. You're going insane. We took up a collection, you know. But they didn't realize he had to burn through this $30 million because if he were successfully do that, he would get the rest of his inheritance, which was $300 million. But he had to burn through this, and people turned against him. People were upset with him. People thought he was crazy. Now, what was also interesting about this is there was a political campaign going on at the time for mayor, and he decided, you know what, this is a good way for me to burn money. I'll run for office as a third-party candidate against the two people who were the, you know, favorites, and they were picked in their particular parties. And his campaign was none of the above. He said, I'm going to run because he's burning this money, but I don't want you to vote for me, and I don't want you to vote for them either. Because they're making a mess of this. Now, interestingly enough, part of the reason why this came to mind is because, you know, it just didn't seem like, and this is, again, this is back in the early 80s, a mayoral, you know, run for, what was it, New York City, I believe it was. And he's like, none of the above. But what was great about it is I thought about how, like, that was 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago. But if you listen closely, almost 40 years ago, if you listen closely, right now, we're in a presidential campaign. Everybody's running. Like, I noticed over the past couple weeks, all the signs started popping up, right? And you can't drive down any street now without seeing vote for such and such a person for judge or for state, you know, Senate and whatever else it is. And a lot of people just kind of feel like, you know what? And this is not a political statement here, but a lot of people just kind of feel like, you know what? I don't like either choice. I really just wish I could vote for none of the above. Why is this so hard? Something like serving as a public servant and being someone who is voted in to office, it shouldn't be that hard. And people think, man, I'm just a regular old person, common sense. This shouldn't be that hard. I relate that back to this, and I'm going to come back to this same movie and talk about a couple other aspects of it here in a few minutes. But trusting God really shouldn't be that hard. How we come back to church and gather with one another shouldn't be that hard. How we go to the store. They're talking about schools opening and how are we going to get this done? There was an interview that this doctor from over, I believe it was over in, it was either, I apologize, it was either over in South Korea somewhere or it was over in Europe. But either way, they were talking about how different countries, comparable to the U.S., maybe not the same size, but they were comparable as far as wealth and education and all these other statistics. They said, why is it that you've been able to get the coronavirus under control in your country, but for some reason in America, we just can't seem to get it right? We're just constantly skyrocketing, all these things. They said, why is it so hard? They said, because the experts and all the scientists and all the different people who are experts in, you know, viruses, they're saying the same thing. But why is this so hard? They said, is it because it's political? He said, well, it's not just that it's political. They said, the problem with America is everything for them is about them. Everything for the individual is about the individual. You're thinking about you in America. But when the virus hit over in Italy and it started wiping people out, their attitude was, oh my gosh, this affects older people and the older population. We got to protect them. Whereas in America, you had people say, well, you know what? Their time was up anyway. They were getting old anyway. Well, they had underlying conditions. You can't just blame it on this or that. Well, this is why I'm voting for Biden. And this is why I support Trump. Everybody's polarized, but it's always about them. See, it's easy to want to blame the politicians. It's easy to want to blame everybody else or blame the superintendent of this school or this governor. And the fact is, everybody has access to the same stuff that they have over in these other countries. He said the issue is not the testing and the mask and the protective gear in the hospitals. The real issue is people relate everything to themselves. That's why it's so hard. I want to look at an example of trusting God, because just like this virus, there are things that go on in the spiritual world, and we might think, well, you know, coronavirus may seem simple to us, but what about you? What about what's going on in your walk with God? That thing you can't overcome, that thing that God is doing is just not making sense to you. It seems so complicated, but actually, maybe it's not. I want to look at two examples today. Matthew chapter 9, starting verse 14, it says, when they came to the other disciples, they saw a large crowd around them and the teachers of the law arguing with them. As soon as all the people saw Jesus, they were overwhelmed with wonder and ran to greet him. What are you arguing with them about? He asked. A man in the crowd answered, teacher, I brought you my son, who is possessed by a spirit that has robbed him of speech. Whenever it seizes him, it throws him to the ground. He foams at the mouth, gnashes his teeth, and becomes rigid. I asked your disciples to drive out the spirit, but they could not. You unbelieving generation, Jesus replied, how long shall I stay with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring the boy to me. So they brought him. When the spirit saw Jesus, it immediately threw the boy into a convulsion. He fell to the ground and rolled around, foaming at the mouth. Jesus asked the boy's father, how long has he been like this? From childhood, he answered. It has often thrown him into fire or water to kill him. But if you can do anything, take pity on us and help us. If you can, Jesus said. Everything is possible for one who believes. Immediately the boy's father exclaimed, I do believe. Help me overcome my unbelief. When Jesus saw that a crowd was running to the scene, he rebuked the impure spirit. You deaf and mute spirit, he said, I command you, come out of him and never enter him again. The spirit shrieked, convulsed him violently, and came out. The boy looked so much like a corpse that many said, he's dead. But Jesus took him by the hand and lifted him to his feet, and he stood up. After Jesus had gone indoors, his disciples asked him privately, why couldn't we drive it out? He replied, this kind can come out only by prayer. Now, right there at the end of verse 29, this kind can only come out by prayer. I want you to put a pin in that because we're going to talk about this here in just a second. But I want to backtrack first. We see a situation here with Jesus and his disciples. It goes back to what I was saying where sometimes even when you're doing the right thing, you're doing it the wrong way. The disciples, there was nothing wrong with how they were going about driving out this spirit. It wasn't as though they weren't really interested in driving the spirit out. But there was a key piece missing that Jesus points out here when he says this kind can come out only by prayer. And I want to come back to this because if you look in the account in other gospels of this exact same story, what you will find is that there are other accounts and even indeed other translations where at the end of this it says this kind can come out only by prayer and fasting. And there's a lot of controversy over that because, well, not a lot, but there's some controversy because people feel like, well, why would you omit the fasting part? And in fact, if you go to the other one, this particular line is actually taken off. And people say, well, why would you take that off? And so there's some disagreement and there's some confusion about why this is in one account but not in the other. But much like what we deal with, there's a reason why the fasting, whether it was added by someone in their interpretation and how they interpreted and actually did their transcription, or whether it was something that was omitted, whatever the reason is, what we find is, what Jesus' point here is this. The reason why you couldn't drive it out is because you were doing this under your own power, with your own thinking, and you didn't come to me first. You didn't bring it to God first. See, the reason why fasting matters, when you fast, and we're going to talk a little bit more in depth about fasting, the reason why you fast is for what? Preparation. What Jesus is saying to them here is, the reason why you couldn't drive this demon out is because you weren't prepared. You were not going to God and getting yourself set up and established. You were doing it based on what you know, and you were doing it based on your logic, and you maybe went back and you did all the research, and you even translated from the Greek yourself, and you did all the exegesis, and you did all the research. You did all these things, but did you go to God and prepare yourself for what it is he asked you to do? See, he said, this is not something that's so simple. Yeah, it's easy to do, but you can also easily do it the wrong way if you're trying to do it under your own power and you're not coming to me first. Our ability to understand God and do the will of God is rooted in our commitment to trust him. Notice where the man says, I believe, help me with my unbelief. At first glance, this may seem like a bit of an oxymoron or something that's kind of like a conflict and it doesn't really make sense. What he's saying is, hey, I believe. I believe in you. I believe that you can do this, but right now I'm a little bit shaken. Show me how it is that I can trust you because I don't see how this is going to work. We live in a world right now where pretty much everybody, it looks kind of bleak, looks kind of dim. There's some real challenges. We think, well, hopefully when this is over, one of my kids I coach, one of their parents, they were saying how, a lady, she was saying how her husband was like, you know what? The coronavirus, this thing will be over as soon as the election comes in November. As soon as that comes, you know, that was his conviction. She said, you know what? I almost hope that you're right, but I don't believe that's the case. There's too many people who are sick. There's too many people who are dying. It reminds me of that meme I saw where it says, you know, it's amazing how, you know, between Trump and Biden, how they got the whole world to get in on this fake pandemic. Because we know it's not fake. But the fact is, something is so simple. It's complicated. Something that is so seemingly just very, you know, step by step, just do this, do that. It's become complicated. Why? Because we're not looking at it from God's perspective. We're not looking at it from God's eyes. We're looking at it from our self-interest. We're looking at it from our own personal agenda, our own personal persuasion. And before you think, well, I don't understand why he's talking so much about this, consider the demons in your own life. Consider the demons that have been running rampant in your own family. This man's talking about his son. He says, you know, it gets involved and it throws him into the fire, it throws him in the water. It's dangerous. It's going to kill him. So let's just set the coronavirus aside. Think about your own life. Think about the areas in your life that you can't conquer. Have you been trusting God to conquer it? You've been doing it your own way. Have you actually been preparing yourself? You know, it was interesting that I thought about the fasting thing. And, you know, the last time I fasted was for health reasons. And it was because I was going to get some blood work done. It wasn't anything serious. I think I had to fast for, what was it, like 12 hours or something like that. But here's the thing about fasting. As simple as fasting is, and it can be a little bit uncomfortable, but as simple as fasting is, people generally don't like to do it. Nobody wants to go through the hunger, even 12 hours. It's amazing how you think. I mean, there have been times when I've actually worked and been busy, and I've gone 18 hours, 24 hours without eating. But it's just the idea that somebody, the doctor says, okay, don't eat anything. Suddenly it's like your stomach won't shut up the whole night. It's like, man, it's only been 3 hours. It feels like it's been a week. I'm going to die, you know. Like, fasting is one of those things that, but what it does is it prepares you. Because you got to get the food out of your system. You got to get the drink out of your system. They tell you just drink water. In order for you to get an accurate test, or if you're going in for a procedure, you're going in for surgery, they got to give you anesthesia. They got to put you under. They tell you don't eat. Don't drink anything past this particular time. Because we don't want you making a mess. Fasting is something that we do to prepare, and we understand it. Do we understand it spiritually? As Jesus is saying, hey, pray and fast. I want to look at an example of this, but think about fasting. I found this helpful. This is tips, and most of us notice it says, drink plenty of water, right? Because you want to be hydrated. Don't want your veins collapsing and stuff. Plan the latest time that you can eat. Real simple. It's like, you know, you got to go in for a procedure at 10 o'clock in the morning. Then, you know what? You need to stop eating by 10 o'clock the night before, or whatever it is, right, depending on your situation. Maintain your normal schedule, including sleep. Like, don't panic. But I love this one. It says, don't drastically alter your normal diet beforehand. So for anybody who's never done this before, what you don't do is go and eat a ton of food at 9:59. No, the idea is that you want to go about it as normal as possible, but the fasting prepares you. It's the exact same when you think about spiritually what it is that you're engaging in when you engage in a fast. I found it interesting. I thought about giving blood because that's the last time I fasted. I think I just told you. And, you know, it was interesting. There was a lady who, she, a medical doctor, this is down in Houston, and And it was really controversial because she was talking about all these evil spirits and these demons, and she was like talking about how the coronavirus, it was safe. You don't have to worry about wearing a mask. And the reason why all this stuff is happening because of all these evil spirits. And immediately people just kind of dismissed her as a quack, and she was crazy and all this kind of stuff. And while I don't want to go too far off into that, what I found that was very interesting was people's take on her. Because we believe in this God of the universe, and we believe in all of these things. We come here to engage in a spiritual encounter. We believe the Bible when it tells us that our battle is not against flesh and blood, but those powers that are on high, principalities, things that are far above us, things that are unseen. As Christians, as men and women of faith, we believe that, but yet, do we prepare for it? I want to look at an example of preparation in this and then tie it together with trusting God as we move forward over the next month or so. In Luke chapter 4, starting in verse 1, says, Jesus, full of the Holy Spirit, left the Jordan and was led by the Spirit into the wilderness, where for 40 days he was tempted by the devil. Tempted can also mean he was tested by the devil. He ate nothing during those days, and at the end of them, he was hungry. The devil said to him, if you are the Son of God, tell this stone to become bread. Jesus answered, it is written, man shall not live on bread alone. The devil led him up to a high place and showed him in an instant all the kingdoms of the world. And he said to him, I will give you all the authority and splendor. It has been given to me, and I can give it to anyone I want to. If you worship me, it will all be yours. Jesus answered, it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. The devil led him to Jerusalem and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. If you are the Son of God, he said, throw yourself down from here, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you to guard you carefully. They will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone. Jesus answered, it is said, do not put the Lord your God to the test. When the devil had finished all this tempting, he left him until an opportune time. We see two very important things here. One is that Jesus, and this isn't the only instance of this, but Jesus fasted. He fasted as he was preparing, not just for these tests that Satan would put him through, not just a temptation. He knew he was hungry. He knew he was tired. He knew what he was about to go through in his ministry. He knew what God was preparing him for and had been preparing him for a long time. And so he's testing him. He's testing him while Jesus fasted. We're being tested. COVID-19 is testing us. It is putting our country under some serious strain. It's putting our families. It's putting the government. It's putting our communities. It's putting all of us under some real strain. We are being tested. As a church, we have to ask ourselves, like Jesus fasted, are we prepared? What are we doing to prepare? How have we gone about preparing ourselves? Are we ready? Because sometimes that very simple test, something that makes perfect sense, something that should be easy, like that scientist said, it should really be easy. But only if you're not thinking about it from your perspective and being selfish and thinking about what you want, this should be easy. As a church, this should be easy for us. But are we willing to prepare? We're in the month of August now. Many of us, frankly, need to take a good look at this. I need to take a good look at this and ask myself, am I failing a very simple test because I have not prepared by going to God first and allowing him to mold me? Fasting prepares us to surrender to God and resist our own will to give in to our nature. The thing about Jesus, he is a man. He is in the flesh. He is human at this point. He is dealing with his own flesh, and yet he resisted it. He was preparing himself. So many of us, we look at the test that we're up against right now and we forget that those things are not even what matter. Those are just tests for the bigger things to come. COVID-19 is just a test for us, for something that God has planned for us that we don't even necessarily know what's coming. It may not just be something in the broad picture for the church. It could be something for you individually. It could be something that's going to happen to you in your own family. It could be something that's going to happen to you in your marriage. It could be a test to see if you're prepared for what's going to happen with your job. What's even going to happen to your own body? Are you preparing yourself? God is giving us time. He is giving us an opportunity. And as a church, we have to ask ourselves, are we failing? You know, I talked about this whole testing thing. I like this. Preparation today leads to success tomorrow. One of the things in baseball, going back to baseball, was working with the kids. A lot of times, the kids, they get up to bat, or even when they're out in the field, they have to make a play. Many times, we've practiced it over and over again, and something is routine. Something is simple. When you start thinking about yourself, when you get anxious, when you want to prove something because you don't like what the other team said, you forget about your teammates. You forget about what matters to those who are also counting on you. You can't get up there and lose your temper. Had a situation, what was it, earlier today? One of the kids on the other side, on the other team, he comes down, he didn't like something, he starts cussing, he starts threatening one of the other players. And we're talking about high school kids, you know. We're not talking about, you know, grown men, not that that would be any better. We're talking about high school kids. And so I tell him, I say, hey, cool off, man. You know, you can calm down. So then he kind of looked at me, and I'm thinking, you don't want this. Like, chill out, relax. So then he goes and starts jawing after the other players on my team. And I looked at that and I thought to myself, he doesn't realize what he's doing in that moment. And in that moment, maybe it made him feel better. But what you do when you do that is actually you make it harder for yourself and you make it harder for the team. Why? Because now the umpires are looking at you. Now they're biased against you. You brought this on yourself because in a moment when you were being tested, you didn't think about the bigger picture. You didn't think about the big plan. As a church, as brothers and sisters, are we thinking about this? And you know, this is note-taking here. Sometimes we have to take notes. That way we can go back and take inventory and look back. And I want us to take some notes here. And this is where, again, I'm coming for toes. I'm coming for my own toes. When we think about this church, we think about this congregation. It was, man, I'm just going to get personal here. I was very moved, although I was grateful and I understood. I was very moved when George decided that he was going to announce to the church and let everybody know that he was going to resign as an elder, which means that ultimately we'll be going through some transition as far as the direction of the church, leadership, how we're going to move forward. But more than anything, I thought about how I haven't seen George in his building in about 6 months. I haven't seen George in his building since March. Now, this goes a little bit, this ties into the whole press play thing. And the reason why I'm doing this on video instead of doing this live on Sunday morning, I've been fortunate, even though I know several people who I've been exposed to, and so therefore I've had to quarantine myself, even though I kept my distance and I've gotten tested and everything. But I know several people who've been sick. I've got 3 friends that I went to high school with who are literally in a hospital right now. Another friend who was in Alabama, a good friend of Sharice and I, who she's been quarantining herself, and fortunately she's feeling a lot better. But there's so many people who are sick. And I was thinking, is George, because of his age, because of he and Miss Juanita's underlying conditions, he said, I don't feel comfortable showing up and announcing, even on camera, even from a distance, I don't feel comfortable doing that myself. And Curtis was willing to come and do that. But part of the reason why is because for some of us, a very simple measure of wearing masks, a very simple measure of keeping distance, a very simple measure of respecting the fact that, you know what, if I don't do what is necessary and keep these protocols, forget keeping people safe. You don't have to believe it's real, but do you not miss your brother George? Because he can't be here. And I'm using George as an example. George is a big boy. He can handle it. I'm using George as an example, but there's a lot of other people. You know, the CDC and the guidelines and the government and Carney, everybody, they opened it up. They said, you know, you can come to capacity of 30%. And they kind of froze it there at 30%. That's 36 people, according to what this sanctuary will hold. That means we have enough distance and enough room for just about two-thirds of this whole congregation to show back up. And we could all be here on Sunday morning. We could be here for Wednesday. We could show up and be together. But are you looking at it from God's eyes, or are you looking at it from your own eyes? Are you thinking about it for yourself? Are you thinking about me? Now, I will tell you, admittedly, I keep my distance. Those of you all have seen me know I don't get too close to anybody. So I'm enjoying the six feet of distance rule. But the fact is, what happens if I get sick? See, that's why I'm doing this on video from a distance. I'm not going to keep doing this every Sunday from a distance. But imagine if I get sick because you cough or you sneeze and you're asymptomatic and the fans go, and it gets me because I have an underlying condition. Or it gets my kids. See, my kids want to be here. They're sad. My daughter says, I haven't been to church in months. She's like, I'm happy to see people. She saw Darlene one day. She's waving out the window. We go down and see George and Juanita. They're happy to see them. They're happy to see when, you know, we drove by. We saw, I believe it was, I don't know if Tom was on. I know it was Andrew and Jennifer. She's happy to see everybody. She wants to be here, but she can't. This is a very small test. This is a very thin, very easy test, just like the disciples. They should have been able to take care of that demon. They should have been able to handle that. It wasn't hard. There wasn't anything special about it. But they failed the test. Because instead of going to God and with prayer and fasting and preparing themselves to have the mind of Christ, they went in their own power. Do you view your demons? Because if you view COVID-19, if you view social distancing, if you're looking at it from a political perspective or some ideology, even if you're looking at it from a health perspective, then the question you have to ask yourself is, how will you ever allow God to work on the demons in your own life? And we don't have to get into the list of them. Everybody's got their own, right? Just like this man, his son was, you know, having convulsions. It was different for other people. Jesus healed a lot of people. The disciples healed a lot of people. But just like all of yours are different, sometimes the things that are going on in your life are a little bit different. The situation in your marriage is a little bit different. The situation at your job, the situation with your house, the situation with your finances, the situation with your children, the situation with your own self, it's a little bit different. And it's not that hard. There's nothing that God can't allow you to overcome. But are you willing to give it to him first? Or are you looking at it from your own eyes? I'm going to end with a few questions here. Do I prepare myself for works of faith the same way that I prepare for things in the natural? Because let's just be honest. Some of us are willing to fast because we care about getting that test done. We want to get that blood work done. We got to get that, you know, whatever procedure it is done. We're willing to fast and prepare for that. Will you do it for your family, your church family? Are you willing to prepare yourself to make that sacrifice? Are you willing to fast and pray and go into solitude? Say, God, help me see this the way you want me to see it. Are you willing to do that so that we can be together, so that we can change this community? Everybody's fighting. Everybody's divided. Everybody's on a different sheet of music. And even the simplest thing, are we preparing for it the way that we would prepare for it with our health? Do we prepare for it the same way? Just like you save money for a vacation, or you save money to buy a car, you save for all these different things. You prepare for things all the time. You prepare to give. You prepare to serve. Do you prepare the same way when it comes to your faith and your walk with God? Do you prepare the same way for your brothers and sisters? Second question, do I trust in my natural ability or lack of more than I trust in God's promises and guarantees to me? I put in promises and guarantees because God promises us certain things. He guarantees that he can work. Jesus says, I'm leaving and I promise that I'm going to leave my spirit right there with you. You won't be alone. You won't be abandoned. But do we trust in ourselves? You know, I think about, again, going back to baseball, how, you know, those of you who've never played baseball, maybe you've never played at a higher level, one of the things is the curveball is one of those things that is very difficult to hit when you're young because you're afraid of the ball. A good curveball looks like it's coming directly at you, and then the spin and velocity takes it right down into the strike zone, crosses over the plate. And the temptation is to want to back up and get out of the way. And you always know when you see a good curveball because they'll back up and then the ball just dives right in there. And then you're totally humiliated. It's embarrassing. And the thing about a curveball, really any pitch, the thing that gets you out of that is you got to get hit with the ball. Once you're no longer scared about, because, you know, this time you get hit by a fastball and it stings a little bit, but you're not afraid. Sometimes we don't trust in ourselves, or we trust too much in ourselves. We either think we can't do it and therefore we're afraid, we're intimidated by it, we run away from it, or we trust too much in our own ability and we don't prepare. We don't allow God to work. We want too much for it to be about us, and we forget what God has promised us. We forget what God expects of us. That he says, if you follow me, if you're willing to carry your cross, if you're willing to imitate me, then I'm going to bless you. We read through all the blessed are the poor, heart and spirit, and blessed are the meek, and blessed are these things. And we read that, but we forget that that's for us. Do we trust in our own abilities? Do we think too much about what we lack, or do we trust that God's promises and guarantees for us are real? Thirdly, how do I respond to moments of unbelief? Have I developed a system or regimen for times of testing when trusting God is harder and goes beyond my mental capacity? See, this demon that had taken over this young boy's body, this was a little bit more than what the disciples were exposed to, what they were used to. Do we respond by going to Christ? Do we respond by trusting him when something goes beyond what makes sense to us? I know I keep going back to this, but there's a lot of things that just don't seem to make sense, right? Some people feel like, well, this just, you know, people are just blowing this out of proportion. There's not that many people dead. And then other people think, well, this is so simple. I don't understand why you just can't wear a mask. All these things. And it goes beyond our wildest imagination. We just don't understand it. Why is this so hard? The question is, how are we responding? How are we reacting to it? Are we going to God with it? Do we respond by saying, God, help me with my unbelief? I know what you said. I know what you expect of your church. I know what you expect of your people. I know this, but help me, because right now I'm not seeing it. One of the things that the kids, they make fun of me, my baseball kids, some of the parents do too, actually. They say, anytime they come up to me with a problem or a question, or they come up to me with something that, you know, my arm's hurting, or my neck is tight, or whatever it is, and my response 99 times out of 100 is, okay. And they'd be like, just okay? I'd be like, yeah, you'll be all right. So now they're just like, don't even go over and tell him. All he's going to say is, you'll be all right. And I mean what I'm saying. I'm not just, you know, brushing them off. I mean it. You'll be just fine. See, I can have that attitude and that perspective because I've seen it so many times before. They think it's the worst thing, in, you know, that could ever happen, and they're panicked by it. The fact is, our response has to be, I may not know how this is going to work out, but I trust God, and if he says it's going to be all right, it's going to be all right. But is that how we respond? There are some hurt feelings. There are some people who are frustrated. There are some people who are confused, that are doubting. People who are even challenged, feeling like, you know what, I just don't even like the fact that Christians are responding to certain things this way. I don't like the fact that people who I call my brothers and sisters are responding in a way that's not favorable, a way that's not godly. And it causes us to doubt. Do we understand that this is just a test and our response has to be, even though I don't know how we're going to make it out of this, even though I don't know how God is going to make the Dover Church of Christ stronger, that he is, and it's going to be all right. Do we truly believe that it's going to be all right? Finally, am I willing to be misunderstood in my approach and attitude towards trusting God? How easily am I talked out of my faith? I bring this up about being misunderstood because sometimes, you know, I talk about, hey, you know, they ask me, I say, it'll be all right. Sometimes when you're standing in that place and people are thinking, well, why aren't you doing more? Why aren't you scared? Why aren't you afraid? Why aren't you reacting to this in a negative way? Why aren't you angry? People have asked me, they said, why don't you do something? Why don't you say something? I tell them I have. Well, why don't you say something again? Because you know what? I'm willing to be misunderstood when it comes to trusting God. People say, that's not trust. That's just, you know, not wanting to deal with things. No. Because it's not always in my power. Some of us, because of peer pressure, because we don't want to be challenged by other people, because we don't want to feel like we folded, that we caved on something. Our pride sets in. We just don't want to be misunderstood. We don't like the idea that, you know what? This person, they just don't particularly understand me. I was talking about Brewster's Millions, and that was one of the things that towards the end, it was okay in the very beginning when he still had $30 million, he's blowing money. But when he got to the last few thousand dollars, people were just like, you're a fool. You're crazy. You're insane. You're wasteful. That's what's wrong with you. That's what's wrong with people like you. You don't value money. They didn't understand. Do we have the type of trust in God that when people say, you know what? You're crazy. You're a fool. I can't believe you still associate. I can't believe that you still allow yourselves to be in relationship with people who I personally am so opposed to. We don't see eye to eye. Does your trust in God supersede all of that to a point where people will misunderstand you and you say, but that's okay. Because what we cannot do is allow ourselves to be talked out of our faith. We cannot allow ourselves to be bullied and peer pressured out of our faith. I mentioned this at the beginning of COVID-19, and I will say it again. I'm not going to be happy. I'm not going to be content until not only COVID-19 is over, but when I can look back and I can see Miss Mary Bay sitting back there in her seat. Yes, that is her seat. I know which one I moved them, but I know which one it is. I'm not going to be happy until I see George and Juanita, until I see Kurt, until those hymn numbers are not going back up, until Curtis Jr. is back here in this building. I'm not going to be content. And it's taken me some time and some testing to get to this place where I can trust God and say, you know what? I don't know how exactly that's going to happen, but I'm going to take it to him first. Is that something that you want? Just be honest. Is that something that you care about? Like that scientist said, the problem with America is that people are so individualistic, everything's so personal. We've even gotten to a point where we think when we come to church that everything is about my personal relationship with God, and we've totally forgotten about the church. We've totally forgotten that I'm not here to get what I want. I am here for others. We've forgotten that Christ died not just for me. He died for the church. When we come together and worship as a church, because I'm grateful for technology and I'm grateful for the internet and I'm grateful to be able to record this video. I'm glad you all will be able to press play. Some of you have no doubt probably hit pause and took a break or turned it off, but that's okay. Whatever it is, I'm not going to be satisfied until as a church we're back together. But that's going to take us doing some praying and doing some fasting and getting it together and understanding that it's not just about me. Some demons, some sins, some things can't just come out with willpower and knowledge and more scripture. Some things require you to give it to God and trust him with it. Are you willing to trust God in that way? Are you willing to say, you know what? This may not make sense to me. I may not agree with this, but I understand what matters. I understand the big picture. Where are you at in your trust in God today? Do you actually believe? Do you care that God bring us all back together? God has great plans for what he's going to do here in the Dover Church of Christ. We're being tested. We're going through some changes and some challenges. But it's going to require us to take it to a new level. And it starts with us really dealing with our hearts, doing some fasting, taking some time alone with God. Are you willing to do it? Are you willing to do it for you? Are you willing to do it for your brothers and sisters? Are you willing to do it so we can come together, not just in theory, not just online, but where we can come back together? Because there's a lot of people that want to be here in the building. But it requires you, all of us, it requires us to be safe. It requires us to care more about others than ourselves. Please join.